In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Crossroad Blues is one of blues guitarist Robert Johnson's songs recorded in the late 30s. Many know the legend of Robert Johnson's life, that he sold his soul at a crossroads to the devil in order to achieve success. Selling your soul to the devil isn't uncommon, even in today's entertainment industry. What's interesting, though, is the location happened to be where two roads cross. In our past discussions with author and leyline expert Peter Shampoo, we talked about the power of energy lines and where they cross, they can sometimes be a place known to be haunted or have UFO sightings or where people are known to vanish. Today, these crossroads or energy points are usually the sites of churches, stadiums, schools, corporate headquarters, museums, military monuments, or obelisks. This is a narrow window into the vast territory covered in Peter Shampoo's book, Gaia Matrix, Arcom, and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. Peter joins us to track down various ley line intersections in the Northeast that yield interesting but mixed results, from Native American history to wars to hauntings. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
All right, well, what prompted me to investigate ley line intersections is the haunted house in Chatham, New York, that you mentioned in the previous interview we had a couple years ago. Can you remind us of the location and what's going on in terms of ley line energy right there?
Well, the exact location I'm not privy to. The information about this house came to me secondhand, and it was in this area of New York State. And near Chatham, New York, specifically, it's in a area that is a focus point of a one ley line coming up from New York City, a telluric ley that connects New York City with Mount Morrissey. Another ley line that goes through that area is the Appalachian ley, and it intersects the Arcom Earth Ring, if you will, which is a whole other story. But right in that area, you have this geologic structure that is called the Shwangunk Mountains. And it's a geologic anomaly in that it doesn't run north-south like many of the mountain ranges, but actually turns a river, the Roundout Creek, to the north, where it dumps into the Hudson River and Kingston. So that confluence of lays and different spin fields and rivers running upstream, if you will, that whenever there's an anomalous occurrence like that, it tends to make a glitch in the matrix, and it opens up a portal. So you have a great deal of mental, spiritual, psychic energy running up and down the New York City lay, and this house, from all reports, was manifesting all manner of different apparitions in Native Americans, colonials on horses, people, engaged in all kinds of different activities in the middle of this living room of this house that was constructed on a lot that no one would build on or could build on. And so this family tried to move there, and they really had trouble from the get-go. From last reports from this person, this hearsay witness, going by there at night, you can often see these glowing orange lights emanating from that house that's now abandoned because it's too crazy to live there. So that's kind of ley lines where there's a great deal of vortexing going on, if you will. Energies can get stuck, and like with any two streams that intersect at the crossroads is where the vortex is.
Is the vortex in terms of energy movement, is that a swirling motion, or is what's happening there?
Well, I call it a static spin because you can't see it on a literally turning around, but you can get indications of this spin by the patterns of the land, how rivers turn, how different planes of geography intersect. There's also the energy vortexes that can be are come in multiple sizes. In my book, Gaia Matrix, I identified, worked with primarily North America, but since that, I've expanded.
Oh, really?
Worked on South America and Africa and different, making quite a body of work, really, on these Earth Ring studies that emulate this vortex. Now, this vortex that I speak of is a best understood through analogy, but the Earth itself is a vortex. A magnetic field is a vortex that the Earth sits within. Our bodies are this magnetic vortex as well. Coming off of the brainstem, there's a magnetic vortex there, and it's off of our spine, there's a magnetic vortex, and it's all the electric universe. It's looking at that pattern, which is replicated from the human eyeball right out to the density patterns within the sun and galaxy. You have this vortex that keeps replicating itself. And that's shown as well in Earth energies, where you go to for instance, the Oregon Mystery Vortex. You can douse out this pattern, and it's the same pattern as you see in the cross section of our planet, or in what we see in a human eye. These vortexes, well up, they're either up, going up, or going down. So they're innies or outies. And sometimes a well-balanced vortex has both of them. So you end up with problems if you have, too much going in one direction. But, so you want this balanced vortex.
Well, I wanted to establish that as we start to get into the intersections, and so listeners can get an idea of the motion of energy that we're talking about. Now, if we start with the big ley lines here that you present in your book, Gaia Matrix, and I think it's on page 24. The map is showing that we can follow the Washington ley line and identify the intersections of the ley lines. If we start with the intersection of the Washington ley and the Liberty ley lines, it's at approximately at the southeast edge of Lake Ontario, Oswego, New York, Fort Ontario, in that area. Just doing a little background on that, you find that, the Battle of Fort Oswego was won in a series of early French victories in the North American theater of the Seven Years' War. A lot happened in that particular area in terms of wars. It's also around a natural boundary that you also talk about. And there's much more going on, as you've recently uncovered. Can you tell listeners about this area?
Yeah, it's always fertile ground talking to you. It's revisiting a place is always fruitful, and with new eyes. So, it's been since '99. The Gaia Matrix was published in '99, and we're talking about the Washington Ley intersecting with the Liberty Ley. Perhaps a little description of those two. That particular intersection has what's famously called the Marysburg Vortex, which is a magnetic anomaly out in the on the water there, kind of right at the outlet of the lake into the St. Lawrence Seaway. Very many ships have gone down, and paranormal activities, whatever, UFOs and such. And it's also in that same area is where the peacemaker, the guy that brought culture to the Iroquois Confederacy, or the Haudenosaunees of central New York, this was the one power that was in the way of the American Confederacy really taking hold. So, there were a lot of issues around that and along this ley line, along this Washington ley that was named in the book Gaia Matrix. But when I was working with Gaia Matrix, I was also working with this thing called the Universal Vector Geometry, which is a Bucky Fuller ball, if you will, a Bucky ball that's superimposed over the planetary structure, you know, keyed into the North Pole, South Pole, and pyramids. And this has been touted on TV as being, you know, the world grid and such. And, you know, it's a way to explain things, but it also might be some kind of control mechanism that we that is in place, because many pyramids are located, and many of the ancient sites were located on this kind of crystalline grid. So it's thought that perhaps, and this line is a part of that crystalline grid, that universal vector geometry. Coming out of Seneca Falls is the central point of this universal vector kind of node, if you will. On this node is, some of your readers or listeners may know, is the one-time site of the nuclear bombs for the country. That was a nuclear dump, if you will, where they stored old nuclear bombs. And it was a very highly secured area, but just it was an armory. So all the way along that line, which is a 7650 in longitude. Mm-hmm. Which I coined in Washington Lay because it ran so close to Washington, and it was, well, it's kind of more of a bandwidth than an actual line in the sand. These ley lines are waving forms like nature frequency and such. And this particular north-south line of Washington Lay, mm-hmm, is a telluric magnetic string. The Earth has this magnetic field, and it goes north-south, and that magnetic field has this current that goes through the surface, just below the surface of the planet, that's electromagnetic in character. And so this electromagnetic thing is thought forms are carried along it. So the thought form that's keying into Washington, D.C. is this birthplace of Daganoanahia, the culture bringer, both of the Iroquois and of the Americas, because the U.S. Confederacy was and Constitution was based on the Iroquois Confederacy that this guy Daganoanahia developed as the Great Law of Peace. But along this string, it seems like there's anything but peace. We find Three Mile Island is on that line, as well as the Battle of York, and it's just very much a Washington line. The actual Washington meridian, if you will, is the 77th parallel. The state capital is on 77-01 or something like that, and the actual meridian is 77-02 that goes through the north and south axis of the Washington, D.C. diamond. So that 77 is a longitudinal frequency, a magnetic frequency. So that's, am I going too fast here, Jeff?
Well, no, but I'm glad you had outlined the bigger picture for listeners, because we want to then go down to the next one, where the intersection point on the Washington ley line is at the Empire Ley. And it appears to be another significant battleground that was recorded and remembered in the form of the Newtown Battlefield State Park, where Sullivan's monument was placed in 1912, a giant obelisk of pure granite. These ley line intersection zones are locations of past war and bloodshed, as you mentioned. What has your work shown about these geographic locations being prone to war?
Well, that particular location was a clash of empire, clash between the colonial empire and the Iroquois empire. That line, the 42nd parallel, is also an empire line, where you have this propensity, and the empire lay, which is the 42nd parallel, has Rome and Constantinople or Istanbul And the Great Wall of China goes along it like a serpent, and it has all these Genghis Khan was born on it, and you know, things like this. It's mm-hmm. it's empire. There's an empire frequency. The people of Serbia are on it, and they had this empire complex, and you know, the greatest Serbian empire is going to rise from the, you know, and they did that horrible thing over there because they were just kind of involved in this. They were right at a vortex of two major ley lines that, you know, had a lot of entrainment of war in them. So,
wow.
So this 42nd parallel is, you know, it's keyed right into the American worldview because it's how it patterns many of the state boundaries, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, Pennsylvania. You go right across the country. Missouri and Oregon, it's all the 42nd parallel. Putting a stone there, it's huge, especially due north of D.C. and all the other stuff that's going on there, as we will learn as we go down the line. But Mark Twain is also buried there, our great metaphorist. as well, there are two prisons there. The Elmira Correctional State Penitentiary is there, you know, horrible place, horrible energy. So it's kind of a control frequency in some ways. You know, it's control. Let's control those crazy Indians up there. We'll even put a prison right next to this monument. Interesting kind of choice of location. If it wasn't indeed a conscious choice, I don't know.
We're not assuming anything here, but I did want to ask you before we get to the next intersection, the idea of putting a particular piece of rock made of granite, for example, or any other specific material in the shape of an obelisk on an intersection energy point, what does that do and why is it being done?
Well, the obelisk has been used since time immemorial, you know, like over in Egypt and such, as a way to ground celestial energy to bring that current down to Earth, the ionospheric current. The obelisk works in concert with a pyramid or a dome. The pyramid is a dome. It's a spherical form that's just crystallized. That's another long story, but. So that there's this loop that goes between the two, like a donut, situation. So there's a communication between the obelisk and the dome, or the cup and the sword. There's a whole pagan thing around the cup and the sword, and we can't really go there, but it's too broad of a subject. It has to do with the Grail quest and all this stuff of consciousness. So if you draw a circle and you turn it counterclockwise and you take your right hand and you turn it counterclockwise, you're going down, that energy is going down. And where that obelisk sits is right there in that pinch point. So you have multiple rings going around and all meeting right there with that obelisk is up there at that pinch point. And that's kind of what that then works with the dome, which turns the opposite way, if you will. It turns outward and creates this space of lifting up and sending outward. So things are collected via the obelisk and then transmitted to the dome. The dome being the state capitals, which would then transmit via. You know, so the Masons, I suspect, you know, this phi proportion and all these kinds of geomancy type things were well known by the Templars and the builders of Europe, and they applied all these things all the time and knew about ley lines and currents, and it was just, you know, we got rid of it because it's an impediment to progress when you start to look at, well, the earth is alive, and no, you can't, the fairies live there, you can't build a highway there, you know, that type of thing was let go. But people end up being on these lines without knowing it, and they have a house full of fairies.
Wow, endangered fairies.
Yeah, they're running out of space to live, and they require lay energy. They require this electromagnetic stuff. I think we do too, You know, the stuff that's carried in ley lines is like a mana in my eyes. It's you know, I believe that the big hairy ones, those Sasquatch and Bigfoot, they live off to some degree, and it's this bioelectric thing. It feeds you, and here we are, being in this this soup of this electromagnetic soup of artificial soup of Wi-Fi and various microwave projections. It's really messing with all the nature, the ability for nature to do its thing with electromagnetism, because everything is all kind of out of coherence.
Yes, you were one of the first to mention that back in 2012 in terms of the interfering with the natural telluric energy. And then Dr. Carmen Bolter, a past guest, had also mentioned the same thing, especially regarding the aerosol operations and our connection to telluric energy in the atmosphere. But I'd like to come back to that. I want to get down to the South Appalachian Ley intersection with the Washington Ley Line. And I found the area that you mentioned also near York, Pennsylvania. And I don't know if that is correct, but it's near Three Mile Island, you mentioned. But also I found near the Harley-Davidson manufacturing plant and near an area called the Seven Gates of Hell. So you have a lot going on with, of course, radioactivity, Harley-Davidson, and then the Seven Gates of Hell. It's interesting what's happening at this particular intersection.
Yeah, Jeff, you've really kind of taken my suggestion and ran with it and proven my theory.
Great.
Well, there's many people doing this, actually, out on the web. They're, chasing these meridians and seeing how things are all lined up, and there's a lot of things going on about, well, the Illuminati have it all out there, and but I'm not quite what inspired Harley-Davidson, which has that particular angle in its block, to that was where Harley-Davidson was actually invented as a,
I don't know, but it's a very big manufacturing plant. I don't know if that's the original spot, but it's one, it's
right
where one exists.
Yeah, and right near there is Hershey, Pennsylvania as well, which, boy, whew, chocolate. If there's anything this country likes, it's chocolate.
Indeed. All right, now getting to the Seven Gates of Hell, you can go online to find information about it on Weird Pennsylvania, those series of books. And the information just goes on and on, but a lot of it's speculation and hearsay, compelling people to go out to the area at night and walk around and get scared. But it's another paranormal anomaly in these intersections.
Right. It's you have the nuclear plant on there, you have the Three Mile Island, you have this Seven Gates of Hell. There's a certain thing that is suggesting that's along this particular meridian of 7650. 77 seems to, in looking at this, it feels like there's more than one meridian in operation here. Where we have coming down through on the east side of the 77th, the 7650. Jeff, you mentioned that it goes also down through the NSA building.
Oh, yeah, continuing down, yeah, between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore. I was looking for it online, and I thought, the Washington Ley Line would cross the city ley line at the U.S. Capitol building, and I was disappointed initially, but I noticed that when it went between Baltimore and D.C., I looked closer on the street view on the maps online, and I thought, wow, this is odd. It just blacked out when you went to the street view. I zoomed out again, and it was the National Security Agency. They won't even let you look around on the street view at their building.
Right.
So it's okay for them to spy on you. But anyway, what are your thoughts on the NSA being at that location?
Well, they're plugged in. There was many years ago, there was a conversation that I heard that nuclear plants had to be placed on earth grid lines in order to operate correctly. That in order for a bomb to actually be detonated, it had to be on an earth grid line. So that particular earth grid line has all these nuclear things already on it, military bases already on it. If you are a spy agency and want to generate a very large antenna, you would probably stretch that over a greater length of space. So if the NSA could use the magnetic field of the planet with keys into these other places that are have that nuclear frequency and that high generation of electromagnetic energy being created, and then bases and plus all the dead cultures, like the Haudenosaunee that are all celebrated in that one monument there. Mm-hmm. It kind of helps in their ability to attenuate frequency. Mm-hmm. And being they have to know about this Acadian layer, the city layer that runs up the coast. It's like glares at you. I mean, with Monticello, yep, and Washington, yep, D.C., Philadelphia,
yep,
Baltimore, yep, Trenton. They're all this single line up through Boston, New York City. It's just a dead straight line. It's a perfect example of a real dynamic lay. And that goes down in Mexico City, but it also goes over through Europe, through Central Europe, and down into the Middle East. So this particular, yes, it's a kind of a visual phenomenon, but it has to be some kind of telluric phenomenon as well that can be tapped into. And I would think that military planners are some of the most esoteric there are. They use everything. It's like, if astrology works to help me win a battle, I'll do it. If geomancy, helps get an advantage, well, yeah, let's use it. And I think they obviously are doing that.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I mean, amazing ley line. You follow that ley, it goes, right through, where it goes right through Washington, D.C., it isn't through Washington, D.C., it's through the Organization of American States, the 77th, 02, which is the bisecting line of the Washington Diamond. And, right down through this, this piece of land that it doesn't belong to this country. It's a sovereign country within, at the center of our capital. It's really a weird thing, Organization of American States was the predecessor to the United Nations. There we have that with Zochipelli there. Zochipelli goes to Washington. That's one of my chapters, my book, about that whole thing. And, along this line, we have Hershey's and all these various drug centers along it, from our where we get our coffee and cocaine. And over on the other side of the planet, goes through the Golden Triangle. So, where a lot of the heroin gets produced and sent over here. So it's like rum, gin, it's all there, chocolate, tobacco. It's all in Williamsburg. It's all in this 77th or 76th. It's kind of this bandwidth. Just to the over in Arlington on the west side of the 77 is the Pentagon, and that the way that's oriented, it points right towards Gettysburg. And points towards the Arlington Cemetery, and then points right towards the Oval Office. So it's a little like the way that folks are kind of like saying, "Oh, the Pentagon is doing something or other," but they're not looking at where it's pointing to. But on its way, where it points to the Oval Office, where it first has to go through Zochipelli's courtyard, it has to be filtered energetically by the Organization of American States. Like in a magico Masonic conversation, it suggests that there might be the Organization of American States is really this kind of central power of this country.
We're speaking with Peter Champeau, author of Gaia Matrix, Arcom and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. We'll be right back after this break.
¶¶
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Peter Shampoo, author of Gaia Matrix, Arcom, and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. You sent me a very interesting map of the placement of Masonic cities, and I had some trouble kind of understanding that. And then I realized, oh, the placement. So there is something significant about the placement of these particular cities and their distances apart, which I find just incredible. That I'm not sure how this happened. Is this by accident or is this intentional? Can you explain this a little bit more?
Yes. Oh, the $94 question. Yeah, explain yourself, Peter. Well, this all came up with looking at relationships between cities. It first started looking at between Boston and Montreal. An architect friend, Henry McLean, he was looking at the relationship to those two cities as two stars with the Orion geometry, the Orion constellation between it. But then we found Montpelier right on this line as well, in this between these two places, and that's odd. Why there? Why have those three? But, and then looking at it, seeing the phi proportion, which what you see in a beautiful face. It's in your fingers. It's everywhere. It's in all throughout nature. It's the 1.618. It's the God number, the golden ratio. It has a lot of different things, but it's a circle with a line through it as the symbol. And so Montpelier ended up being on the phi divide between these two positions, Boston and Montreal. And looking at an alignment between New York City and Quebec City, again, Montpelier was on that phi proportion between the two sites. From my history lesson, I remember that the state of Vermont was having trouble finding where should we put our capital. No, we don't want it in Burlington. No, we don't want it in Brattleboro. No, we don't want it in Windsor. And then all of a sudden, all this money became available to have it built in Montpelier. So they built it in Montpelier as the capital. Conway, I suspect it happened in the same way. Arbitrary, as they became a colony, all right, where are we going to put our capital? The people who were in control of all these decisions were Masons. They were the culture bringers of our American civilization, and I believe that they chose these places to create a high frequency and connection between Canada and the Americas, between the lodges of Canada and the lodges of America, and these lodges at these various capital zones. The State College, that was another clue that hit me. State College, Pennsylvania, was another place that was just selected by the powers that be to build a State College, and there wasn't anything there before. And they just put it there. So that's on that alignment between D.C. and Buffalo and Toronto. Albany, New York, Albany, Montreal. Albany is on that phi proportion divide. So it brings beauty to a culture, but it probably already existed. You can see, for instance, that Quebec, Montreal, and Kingston, which is the length of the St. Lawrence River, would have been obvious to any colonial map maker look at that, phi proportion. I mean, somebody who was a map maker was also a Mason, like George Washington. Curious to add that George Washington's birthplace was also on the 77th parallel. How all this happens, it's conspiracy of grace. I don't know. Is this the information of angels, or should we not know this, or powers that be should know this, and we shouldn't, I don't know. It seems as though that there was a conscious effort to create culture here, and there was already some existing patterns within the landscape that were proportioned in phi, the distance between Boston, New Haven, and New York City had that frequency to it, just because that's the thing that nature does, even on the planet and the planet's surface and in our bodies and in everything that water touches, it tends to just blossom in a phi proportion. By using that, by using the geometry of nature, cultures have, you know, kind of a seed or nest into the existing matrix. The Greeks and Romans were real huge on making structures that were, you know, to these, and Egyptians, to these specific canons of nature and sacred geometry, so that they would grow as an organic thing.
Okay, I understand this a little bit better now, and I really appreciate you explaining it a bit more for me and listeners. And so the natural geometry is already within the landscape, and a skilled map maker, mason, would use what's already there to, well, you said create culture, to create control, a control grid, however people want to see it. And it's open-ended in the sense that it's using geometry, which allows it to grow within those ratios. Is that correct?
Correct. And with them using the life-giving geometry of Phi, you know, those are good intentions. Whenever I see that, that's life, that's good stuff.
Excellent. All right. I wanted to go into the area of maybe a darker area here, because I noticed, and this is probably because of Christianity, but it's hard to say. There was an article of interest titled "Devil Map of United States is a Diabolical Trip Through America's Hellish Places." And basically what it did is look at all these areas that have the name devil in it across the country. And there's a lot of them: Devil's Tower, Devil's Peaks, on and on and on. And I came across one that was at the intersection of the Chakra and Base Ley Line in Massachusetts, called Satan's Kingdom Wildlife Management Area.
Yeah, I often walk out there.
You do?
Yeah. It's a very folded landscape. The hills are about, maybe 100 yards apart, about 50 yards deep. You know, it's just up and down and up and down. It's just this contorted landscape. Right in that area is where the Great Eastern Fault did a lot of pushing and shoving. And it's usually these places are places of Manitou. Things that aren't explainable are attributed to the devil here on Earth. And often as well, in the effort to demonize Native culture, Native people, anything that the Native peoples appreciated or honored as a sacred site was given this moniker. Because they were old Native American sites, certain sacred sites need maintenance in order to, you know, keep things from getting cluttered and, collected there from, you know, the ash and trash, the astral ash and trash. Those areas are often as well where you find Bigfoot, the guardian of the planet. You know, there, you know, Putnam County is up in New York State. That's real big Bigfoot country there. And you find pockets where there's a lot of sightings of the big hairy people, the wise ones. Devil's Hop Yard, actually, that's down in Connecticut. That's right along the City Lay. Devil's Hop Yard and the Moodus Moans. A lot of anomalies happen down that way, which is the bottom end of the Connecticut River.
Right. I think we're starting to see an interesting pattern take place, especially in the areas that where Bigfoot is often sighted, and I guess the level of electromagnetic activity and anomalous activity, not the man-made electromagnetic activity. Getting back into New York City for a minute, you mentioned that a listener had asked you about Central Park. There was something odd about Southern Central Park, and you did a little bit of work looking at that area. Can you share that information?
Actually, she was a radio host. She's a street musician, and running around the city, found this vortex just south of the Central Park, And what she described to me as the location was at the corner of the stretch of area near 7th on 40th, close to where Broadway intersects 40th. That area right there ends up being on a an intersection of what I'm feeling there is what gets collected in the park. You know, because there's nature and water there within the park. There's it's where all the devas get to gather if they want to visit, and that telluric current going in and out of the park needs some kind of portal. And her experience there sounded very much like a portal, like she was just sinking away and disappearing into another dimension. And she came back a couple of times to see if it would happen again. And sure enough, same place, same channel. And that's right at the where this location is right at the central axis of the Central Park there of Manhattan. Yeah, intersecting these lines. There's a number of lines that come through there. One that connects up New York City to Quebec City, which is the one of power. That runs really quite close to there. So any of these ley lines all have these vertices where things just kind of curl off. There's, it's a frequency. It's a waveform. But the Rockefeller lay, if you will, or the Berkshire lay, I call it in my book,
mm-hmm.
and it's that one that connects New York to Quebec City, and where it goes right through the Rockefeller Center and up through the Rockefeller Family Estate, Caket, and then up through Berkshire County, where it hits a lot of the cottages, as they say, of the Berkshires. Where the wealthy would go to take in the airs and the good energies, as well as many art museums and prominent mountain features. And so it's like a mixture of culture and nature. And this same ley line also goes up into, up through Connecticut and in Litchfield Hills. It's a line of power that comes through New York City, and it kind of keys right into the Manhattan side of the Brooklyn Bridge, the stone towers on the Manhattan side of the Brooklyn Bridge, I guess, are the anchor of this ley line that comes through there.
Yeah, they really look like they have some other use to them. You also had mentioned the Nexus, and you had even got close. You mentioned in a past interview that it was in the New York Harbor, but you recently found something else out where some of these lines converge.
Yeah, we were looking at this Liberty Lay where it connected up with the Washington Lay way up in Lake Ontario in the Marysburg Vortex,
mm-hmm.
and where it mixes with the Acadian Lay down here, the Liberty Lay Acadian Lay mixes in the vortex of the New York Harbor. But if you want to draw the line straight, as I draw it through Oswego and Syracuse and Lake Onondaga, using that as a trajectory along the Delaware Water Gap and through High Point, Jersey, it comes down through Ellis Island. So it's this metaphor of liberty, and it's just really, really beautiful because it goes through Syracuse, it goes through Onondaga. That was the central fire of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. It was the place of peace, it was the place of liberty where everybody could come without fear.
Hmm.
It's the same kind of frequency being held here. So this line across the, and this is a natural ley line that's reinforced by culture, the Delaware Water Gap and the plains of the Oswego River and it's a geologic plain that comes right across the country, aiming right at New York City.
And specifically Ellis Island, the gateway.
Ellis Island, yeah.
A gate for the immigration at one point.
I know, and I had a little fun in my book about the shape of Manhattan being comparable to a human penis, and then being surrounded by queens and all this kind of watery substance. Bronx seems to be, I apologize, the scrotum and where all the uterus is Staten Island, if you will, and the vagina and the birth canal is right there in that in the New York Harbor. So, you know, this is the birth, this is the mixing bowl of our country being stirred in this great cauldron of New York City, you know, with all these all these ley lines coming down, activating it like a, you know, in some kind of laboratory, you know, all right, you know, bring in the tellurics, you know.
You are, you know, that's right on the money there.
It's all metaphor, but it's truth, too. It's
now that we've gone into identifying the intersections at certain points, it's revealing a lot of history that it might seem kind of uninteresting until you start to look at the locations and you connect a few more dots here, and it starts to add up into something else. I noticed, I was just looking around South Central Park, and I saw the Grand Army Plaza, and I realized, oh, there's another one at Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And then they're all over the place. They're in other cities. What is a Grand Army Plaza? What is the significance of that?
Your question, I looked up on the internet. It's the first time I've heard of them, but you know, the Grand Army of the Republic would want to assemble somewhere to strut their stuff, you know, and so they would need assembling grounds, and that's probably where it originated from. It was from assembling grounds, and you know, over in Paris, you got the Arc de Triomphe. You have to, you know, to marshal the, you know, so all everybody, you know, it's a great place for a parade.
Right.
Something to do, something to hang out, some place to come to when you know, when war arrives, and then it became a ceremonial place as a remembrance of when war came, and you know, as a place to gather to remember the war dead. Each town of America has its own Grand Army Plaza because it's, you know, if you just think about every center of any town in America, it has a monument to the war dead. That obelisk also, you know, like it's often a monument to the war dead. And what that does is it takes what everyone's learned, all the you know, the frequencies of all those souls that have passed and sacrificed for the sake of the country. And from their perspective in heaven, or from the perspective of, you know, a Mason who also put a obelisk on his grave, you know, that can be sent down from above and returned to the, you know, to the people. And there's like a loop that happens, a connection between, you know, between the dimensions, you know, for our memories. And, you know, it's all, you know, part of that thing. And it's also part of, you know, keeping the Republic strong and vigilant and focused on warfare. You know, I would really like to see something other than war memorials in the center of our town commons, because it tends to create a martial frequency within us all. That, you know, when we don't have war, how do we identify ourselves? Who are we? You know, it's like, you know, prior to Iraq and you know, 9/11, it's like, oh, you know, we don't have an enemy, you know, Russia's gone, and whoa, who's our enemy, you know? And it's like we started to look inside and say, whoa, you know. So quickly, an enemy was found, and we were distracted again, and our nationalism was restored. And I mean, it's a sad thing, but it's a wonderful thing for us survivors, you know, to have these places of remembrance and connection. And but it's also, as well, a control frequency to keep us tied into this loop of warfare. And, you know, I was like, wow, now enough already.
I know. And I just want to remind listeners, we're speaking with Peter Shampoo. His book is Gaia Matrix, Arcom, and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. Peter, we've got a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you, how can listeners get in touch with you, and what are you working on now?
Well, let's see. I have a website. It's called Geometry of Place. Yeah, Geometry of Place, all one word, .com. Well, I just completed a study that is kind of the advanced work that I've synthesized, and it's real dense reading. It's 50 pages with 25 illustrations. I think I've shared it with you, Jeff. The address on that is geometryofplace.com, but /antero.pdf. So that's antero.pdf. And I'm looking at, in this, I'm looking at creating a national sacred site. What is that space that brings us together as a consciousness, as a people? And I looked into that, explored that out in the San Luis Valley of Colorado. So I've been looking at that and the overall spin patterns. I'm finding these static spins, like, for example, the Great Lakes is a very, a glaring example of a static spin. If you look at the shape of the lakes, they look like they're turning to the right, clockwise. Mm-hmm. So you look at the continent of North America and you see how it's spinning, and it looks like it's spinning clockwise. So I'm starting to see how all these various rings that I'm discovering all throughout the body of North America, which are referenced by arc shapes in the land, and I just complete with a circle, appear to be electromagnetic in nature, because they all end up gearing into the magnetic ring at the top of the planet. I'm discovering that there's this whole gearing mechanism, and the gearing mechanism is all kind of tiered back to the Hopi Mesa. So it's all dependent on the Hopi to return to doing their ceremonies and praying for rain in order to get everything moving again. It's kind of my conclusion. So I'm looking at I'm trying to find the utility for this. Right now, I'm broke, I'm poor, I got $100 in my bank, I'm living off my girlfriend. I do this work because it's the only thing I can do, but how it actually, what it is and what the benefit is, I'm still really struggling with. It's an elephant in the dark, I'm feeling the leg, and I know there's an ear up there somewhere, we're working on it. We're trying to get into a body of work that will bring a collective consciousness, a new world view to America, one that's based on what the planet is made of, what the shapes of it are. So if we interact with the planet as it is, with its own natural patterns, we can grow harmoniously with it, and as opposed to trying to hammer in some kind of rectangle and force the Earth to be this way. So I'm looking at the planet as just trying to develop this art, if you will. I'm not a scientist; I'm an artist, and I look at patterns. I was a stonemason for years, so I'm just looking at patterns within the Earth. I've kind of taken on this hat that I call myself the Earth Stone Reader.
Okay.
And, because that's what I'm just, it's like a stone, and mm-hmm. I'm reading it like I would a rock in a quarry, and how to work it. And so it's a very interesting stone, and it's alive, and it shows, how nature and culture interact. They do cohere. This shows coherence in the landscape. It takes that chaos, that entropy that's become our culture, and gives it a coherence, gives it a way in which we can all see how we all interrelate and interpenetrate, these expanding rings and this thing I call the shampoo effect, because it's like this bubbling lather of like etheric energy in the surface of the Earth.
This is exciting material, and urge listeners to visit Peter's website. Peter, I really appreciate you going through this this work here and identifying the intersections and elaborating on some of the amazing stuff that you've uncovered, and very original work, and I really applaud you for it, and thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome, Jeff. You're very welcome, and thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
The That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.